Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Francine McKenna, a good friend of mine who has been blogging many years on the auditors. There's a link to her blog from where you access this podcast. Check that out. But she's also now a regular columnist for Forbes and many other publications. She's really leveraged her blogging across mass media platforms because she does such a good job. And we're going to talk to her a little bit about the recent developments in the audit industry. The first question for you, Francine, is been a lot of news recently about the PCAOB inspection reports and what audit committee should do. There's, I guess, a new standards. Why should companies care about those reports?
Well, as you know, the PCAOB, the audit regulator that was implemented in the Sarbanes-Oxley law, looks at probably 8 to 10, I have to look at the current number, 8 to 10 larger firms on an annual basis. Those are firms that audit more than 100 public issuers. And those firms, they produce a report. Unfortunately, it's on a little bit of a lag, about a year and a half lag from when the actual audits occur. But the information is still relevant because it highlights quality concerns that could point to issues in your industry, with your audit firm, or with your company specifically, if it was one of the companies that was chosen, one of the engagements that was chosen as part of the inspection process.
So how can an audit committee learn more about an inspection report? So should they ask the auditor, or do they go to the PCAOB?
Well, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act doesn't allow the PCAOB to make public or share with audit committees all the information that they get via an inspection, but you can certainly ask your auditor. You can ask your auditor, and there's no prohibition against them sharing the information in either the public section of their inspection report or the private section of the report that talks about audit quality management issues and audit firm administration issues, which are sometimes even more interesting. If you recall, Deloitte is the only Big Four firm ever to have the private part of their inspection report made public because back in 2006, some concerns were identified in how they were managing quality assurance on the audit process, and they weren't fixing that on a timely basis. So the PCAOB has the right to make those concerns public if the firm is not fixing them quickly. So you can ask your audit firm, and both the PCAOB and the CAQ, which is the Center for Audit Quality, an arm of the AICPA, the Audit Industry Trade Association, have put out some guidelines in terms of the kinds of things you should be asking as an audit committee about these PCAOB inspections.
Can an inspection report be used in litigation against the auditor by a client or other plaintiffs?
It can, but not necessarily directly. What's happened is that as more plaintiff attorneys in particular have found out about the kind of information that is included in these inspection reports, and as more journalists, for example, like Jonathan Weil, play the parlor game of trying to figure out which companies are the ones that are mentioned in the inspection reports because the company, the issuers, are kept confidential, you've got companies realizing and plaintiff's lawyers that are suing on behalf of shareholders realizing that maybe their company, maybe the regulator has actually mentioned some of the issues that they're suing about. Probably the most recent case is when Navistar decided to sue Deloitte over a very long-standing dispute they had when they fired that auditor back in 2005. And Navistar went through a period of restatements and delisting and investigations, et cetera, and just a couple of years ago, they decided to sue Deloitte, and part of the evidence that they used was the fact they had become aware of the inspection report and the fact that Deloitte partners were supposedly very aware of quality concerns and how they were conducting the audit. That suit ended up getting settled, so it didn't really go very far. But I've heard from other plaintiffs' lawyers that they're aware of those reports and where they can figure out whether or not the company in question is the one that's being mentioned, or there's some other informer or whistleblower or someone who makes it obvious that those concerns are specific to that company, the issue could be raised. The PCAOB, though, however, can't be subpoenaed for those inspection reports. That information cannot be subpoenaed from the regulator.
So let's talk about auditor independence, particularly where, you know, it's a big company with operations, global operations, so the auditor is using member firms. Whose responsibility is it to ensure the firm is independent? Is it incumbent upon the auditor, or is it the audit committee's job?
Well, there's responsibilities on both sides, and as you know, the auditor does make that disclosure to the company each year. However, the ultimate responsibility in ensuring that the auditor is independent to the company is the audit committee, is the board of directors. And so if they have any concerns or questions, they need to surface those. Usually when you're thinking about independence, you're thinking about issues either of prohibited services, is the auditor performing services that are prohibited now by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, or some of the notorious cases of insider trading by audit partners such as the Vice Chairman Tom Flanagan at Deloitte, or a couple of other cases that we've seen in recent years. But there's lots of other ways that an auditor can be not independent of their audit client. For example, if they get involved in business transactions with the audit client, some of the audit firms in the past, before Sarbanes-Oxley, used to develop strategic alliances in order to deliver or implement software and technology and hardware products with some of their clients, and that's not allowed anymore. So you have to look at other kinds of business relationships that you could have with the auditor that could be perceived as an independence conflict, too. And the audit committee is really charged with making sure that the auditor's disclosure to them is a full disclosure of all of the business relationships that could cause a problem.
And what happens if the firm is deemed not independent?
Well, I mean, a worst-case scenario is when you have a situation like the Deloitte insider trader Tom Flanagan. Flanagan was found to have been trading in the securities of some of the Deloitte clients while he was serving as a liaison between those companies' management teams and the Deloitte engagement teams. He was a very senior member, a vice chairman of the firm, sort of a managing partner emeritus of the firm here in the Chicago area. And it turned out that FINRA discovered that there was abnormalities in activity in trading activity in some companies where he was acting as an advisor, specifically Walgreens' acquisition of Option Care. So the SEC called the companies, and the companies were shocked and, of course, called Deloitte, and an investigation ensued on all sides. What happened, though, is all the companies had to conduct an internal investigation. That cost money, cost time. They had to make a determination of whether Deloitte was still an independent auditor, which they did. Based on Deloitte's advice that this partner had not been involved in actually the specifics of the audit, but it was more a client relationship person. But it was a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of potential embarrassment if one of the companies had actually decided to change auditors and to determine that their financial statements that were covered by the period when this guy was involved were actually audited in a non-independent way. They might have had to go back and have another audit firm re-audit those. It could be very, very messy if you find that the auditor has been not independent during a period and have to go back and have someone re-audit those statements.
Thanks. That's great stuff. You know, I've read recently on your blog, or I guess it's, you know, not so recent, but over the years, about the independent auditor's role when there's a corporate investigation. Can you discuss that for us? When can the auditor be hired to perform an investigation for fraud, or should they be? Pros and cons?
Well, again, pre-Sarbanes-Oxley, it was pretty common practice for the external auditor to be the first one you called if you needed something investigated. It sort of makes sense in terms of their knowledge of the company and their expertise, especially if you're talking about one of the larger firms. However, when you look at it in terms of their roles and responsibilities as an auditor and where their primary focus should be, I personally think it's absolutely insane to ever have the external auditor involved in a corporate investigation. In particular, when you have any kind of allegations against more senior management, because the auditor's first responsibility is to determine whether management's representations are true and whether they trust management in terms of all of the information they're getting. And if they're also put in a position of trying to help determine whether there's any liability related to a particular issue against management, that can be a really difficult situation for them to be in. Probably the most notorious case on that is Ernst & Young acting as an investigator and interviewing the whistleblower in the Lehman Brothers case. That's the only legal thing they're still hung up on in the class action lawsuit against them, the fact that they were aware of the whistleblower's claims right before an audit committee meeting and didn't disclose that information to the audit committee. That was really, really short-sighted, I think, on Ernst & Young's part. The desire to kind of keep it inside, the desire to not even call the experts within their own firm in investigations and forensic, and to have the audit partners themselves interview Mark Lee, the whistleblower, was, I think, something that's come back to haunt them.
Pretty crazy stuff. Scary. Well, thanks again for your time. As always, I love reading your stuff, and I'm glad to see you're getting out to the masses through Forbes and other publications. Congratulations to you.
Thanks, Brock. You've been a supporter for a long time, and I appreciate that.